Our next speaker is Eva Tchaikovska-Higgins from the University of Victoria, and her talk is Shifts in Fieldwork Roles in Community-Based Language Research.
I'd like to first acknowledge the territory of the Hawaiian people that we're standing on today. That's something that we traditionally do in British Columbia. And there are just two quotes that I've given here that I kind of inspire the work that I'm doing. One is from Jane Hill's paper, Sensitive Documentation Requires the Deep Involvement of Communities. And the second is from a paper by a very close colleague of mine, Donna Gertz, The Linguist is Most Useful as Part of a Language Revitalization Team. And that's from a paper that Donna wrote on what use a linguist is. And I'd like to also acknowledge my colleagues on the Coast Salish Language Revitalization Cura Project. Our collaborative effort has inspired and informed my thinking about community-based methodologies in linguistics. And although I'm not actually talking about the project as such today, much of my thinking is derived from the work that we're doing. Also, without the support and the direction of the elders who've contributed to the project, and without their dedication to revitalizing the two languages, Hakumina and Sinchathan, that we work on, the Cura would not have been possible. And then I'd also just like to acknowledge that the project that I've been working on for the last 6 or 7 years is funded by the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada. So I take as a starting point what so many of us seem to be talking about today, that linguists undertake linguistic research on small indigenous languages in collaboration with community members a lot more today than we used to when I started doing linguistics 25 years ago. And as a consequence, the roles which outsider linguists and community members take on in fieldwork are changing and shifting. So the purpose of my talk is to do several different things. One is to describe a collaborative community-based language research model, which actually goes a step beyond the empowerment model that was talked about in the earlier paper. And also then to describe some non-traditional fieldwork roles which can occur in this kind of a community-based language research model. And then some implications of shifts that occur in the research roles. There's so many different things that one could talk about, and so I've kind of picked three of them, and they may not entirely fit together. But what I'm really trying to do today, in many ways, is to problematize the work that we do in communities. And I should start off by saying that I come from a very specific research context, which is the context of British Columbia in Canada. And that's a context in which historically there were 32 to 34 languages from 5 different language families to isolates. And almost all of these languages are dying. Most are seriously endangered. There's also a very strong thread of language activism within the communities and also within linguistics departments in the province of British Columbia. And another thing which is which informs a lot of the work in Canada and in BC is that there are a lot of guidelines that have been proposed by various institutional bodies associated with research in Aboriginal communities. And in Canada, Aboriginal is used to refer to First Nations, Inuit, and also Métis, so it's used differently than it is in Australia. The two languages that I've been most involved in over the last 6 or 7 years are spoken on southern Vancouver Island, which is on the west coast of Canada. One of the languages, Sinchathan Salish, has approximately 15 fluent elderly speakers. The other is Hakuminam Salish, and that has more, approximately 150 speakers. And this Cura project that I mentioned is a community university research alliance project, which is funded by the Canadian government, and it's called Language Revitalization in Vancouver Island Salish Communities, but we usually refer to it as the Coast Salish Language Revitalization Cura. So a Cura is a research project based on partnerships between community organizations and universities, and it provides the structure to coordinate and support research, education, and training and information sharing. So why this is important is because the Canadian government has actually set up a program to support collaborative research, and that informs the work that we all do. Okay, so what is community-based language research? And as I said, I'm going a step beyond the empowerment model that Cameron and her colleagues proposed. And I'm defining it as research that is on a language and that is conducted for, with, and by the language-speaking community within which the research takes place and which it affects. This kind of research involves a collaborative relationship and a partnership between linguists and members of the community within which the research takes place. And I'd just like to make clear that when I use the term linguist, I'm talking about an outsider to the community trained in the Euro-American system, so someone like me. There are community linguists, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking from my own experience and understanding. And community includes all members of a language-speaking community from the grassroots up to various decision-making bodies. In community-based language research, there are a number of principles of respect which are important to keep in mind. And these are fairly standard for collaborative models of research in linguistics, and also, for instance, the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples in Canada has used these kinds of principles of respect when to talk about how research should be conducted in Aboriginal communities. But this particular version is taken from a talk that the CURA Project people gave last couple of years ago. So first of all, research should enable the communities to exercise control over information related to their knowledge and heritage and to themselves. The research should be managed and evaluated jointly by the communities and the other partners. Project purposes and plans should be developed in collaboration with and under guidance of community members. And communities should have direct input into developing and defining research practices and projects related to them. The community-based language research model parallels participatory, collaborative, or community-based models which are found in disciplines such as nursing and other health sciences, and especially in education. And there's actually a whole body of literature on community-based research. So what are some of the defining characteristics of CBR? One is that it is defined as involving collaboration between research and community, researcher and community. It involves what can broadly be referred to as democratization of knowledge. It involves social action and social change for the purpose of achieving social justice. And it often involves the assumption that research is not simply an intellectual act, but that it is also a practical act which can have practical implications and applications, especially for improving social conditions. Now, how does this contrast with the kind of linguist-focused traditional model? In some ways this is obvious, but it's worth keeping in mind. That kind of linguist-focused model is research that is on a language and conducted by the linguist according to the linguist's agenda. So a typical example of this is given in Samarin's 1967 discussion of field linguistics, where he says that it's primarily a way of obtaining linguistic data and studying linguistic phenomena. And he also says the speaker of the language, the informant, is the source of information. What are some assumptions behind this kind of model? Well, first of all, there's a strong distinction or a divide or a boundary between the linguist and the community. In this kind of model, the linguist is the expert, the language speaker provides the data, the linguist poses the research questions and sets the agenda, and the linguist is also a disinterested observer and a recorder of facts, so a scientist, and not a participant in the context of the research. So, if you're doing truly collaborative work, if you're trying to work within a community-based language research model, those kinds of assumptions no longer hold. And so there are other possible roles that can be taken on by linguists and also by language speakers, by community members. So here's one possible type of situation where the speaker is actually the leading researcher. So you can imagine participants who are speakers, and speakers could be teachers and or people that are experienced in working with linguists and other researchers. And then, of course, you might have university-based linguists. You also might have research assistants who are from the community. In this kind of a situation, the content of the material and the documentation produced is largely determined by the knowledge of the speakers and by the speaker's understanding of the language. And the content is shaped by and possibly added to by the linguists. So that would be one possible type of situation. And another one would be what I'm calling the speaker as the expert. And this is slightly different from the earlier one, where the speaker is the leading researcher. But in this kind of situation, the speakers are experts in their culture and their language. They're often central figures in their community. And then, of course, there are university-based linguists. And the speakers provide the intellectual content of the projects and guide their shape. They can also be transcribers and translators of stories, so they're language experts in that sense. The linguists in this kind of a situation serve in the capacity of recorders, transcribers, organizers of a database, maintainers of a database, but they're not the experts. And there's a couple of different ways that these situations could happen. So for instance, you could have a situation where the speakers and the community members and the linguists collaborate on initial work plans and execution of the project. So from the beginning, there's a collaboration. Or another thing that could happen is that the speakers and the community members initiate the project and set it in motion, and then they invite a linguist in after the initial stages in order to support the project. So one thing which I'd just like to say is that the research situations that I've just described fall into the category of language documentation or documentary linguistics, as was defined this morning, and they involve fieldwork, where fieldwork is defined as means of recording primary language material. What kinds of outputs could you have from these sorts of research situations? Well, you might have audio and video footage. You might have showing language use in specific cultural settings, documentation of grammatical constructions, perhaps, and a vocabulary specifically for language teaching. You might have DVDs or CDs of stories and culturally situated teachings, vocabulary lists organized according to specific cultural understanding, and various kinds of pedagogical materials. Now, what are the linguists' roles in community-based language research in these kinds of situations that I've mentioned? Well, for one thing, linguists are not the lead researchers. They're not the only experts, and the language speakers are not actually providing data. Linguists are mostly not collecting data. Linguists are not disinterested observers, and they're not recorders of facts. They're not posing research questions or setting a research agenda. What they might be doing is providing part of the expertise needed to enable the speakers to document their own language using audio-video technology. They would likely not be involved in writing reference materials or other scholarly works, but they could help to produce educational materials and programs. They also could be involved in training others, and they could have facilitated the teaching of the languages. And one crucial aspect of all this as well is that the linguists would be undergoing training in community protocols, cultural practices, and collaborative modes of working with communities. So in community-based language research, where there's a true collaboration, linguists learn as much, if not more, than community members, and it's certainly a very hard apprenticeship in some cases. Linguists, in these kinds of situations, would primarily be acting in a supporting role. So they enable, facilitate, coordinate, manage, and open the way for language work to take place in the community. They also could serve as advocates for community language learning and teaching in a university setting, and they might also need to serve as bridges between the community and the university. There's a lot that people from outside the university do not understand about what happens in a university, and there's a lot of translation that needs to take place. Okay, so I've very broadly sketched out some possibilities, and so what are some of the implications of this very community-centered way of undertaking language work? Well, as I said before, one set of implications or sorry, one set of implications is associated with research questions. And as I said before, linguists would not be posing the research questions or setting a research agenda in a truly community-based language research model. So one of the implications of that is that research questions are likely not focused on language structures. So one of the things that might happen as a result of this is that it could raise questions for linguists about the nature of their research. Like, what exactly is it that they are doing as part of this language team? And we've heard a number of people today already talk about institutional requirements and expectations. Here's a quote from Ariane Dwyer's 2006 paper. The ethical requirements of fieldwork-based investigation are complex as they demand that the researcher attend both to a respectful and reciprocal relationship with the language community and produce a documentation meeting the standards of the academic community and the funding agency. And Donna Gertz herself has said that the linguist is most useful as part of a language revitalization team, but this is a difficult role for an academic to assume since competitive individualistic efforts are fostered and rewarded in the university setting. So one thing which I think needs to be kept in mind if we really want to do collaborative work is that we need to think about ways in which working that way can be valued in an academic setting. And it's difficult to know exactly how to do that without advocacy work on our part. Another set of issues that arises when the linguists are not the kind of experts, the lead researchers in a community-based project has to do with intellectual property issues. So we all know that when we do work in communities with human subjects, there are standard research ethics boards requirements, intellectual property agreements. There are often memoranda of understanding that need to be undergone. Sometimes researcher contracts are signed, and we also are often expected to make sure that the people that we work with sign consent forms. Some of the standard assumptions behind these sorts of expectations are that a researcher is actually a community outsider and is going to extract material from the community. And that we need these kinds of agreements in order to clarify terms and conditions of ownership so that the researcher does not come to own what is not theirs. And so again, memoranda of understanding, for instance, are often intended to ensure that a community's intangible cultural property does not become the property of a researcher. And university intellectual properties often incorporate an understanding of research that does not acknowledge the possibility that it might not be appropriate for the university member to communicate the results. So for instance, the University of Victoria intellectual property policy says that the university will not enter into arrangements that restrict university members from communicating the results of such activities without the permission of the creator. So questions that arise when you're doing this kind of research is, who owns the documentation when the speaker is the researcher? What are the rights of the community partner versus the rights of the speakers to the documentation versus the rights of a university researcher and a university? So by community partner, I mean, for instance, the larger band council versus the language speakers who are acting as the lead researchers. Do they have different rights? Who has priority in a situation like that? Another question is, who should sign a researcher contract? If I, as a linguist, work with language speakers, then I might sign a research contract saying that I'm going to behave ethically. Should a language speaker who is also the leading expert, the leading researcher, sign a research contract? And then, of course, another question is, what's the meaning of a consent form in the context of truly collaborative research where the speakers are the leading researchers, the experts, and or the envisioners of the research? How can you sign consent in a situation like that? So we need to think about ways of accommodating these different sorts of roles in our intellectual property approaches. Another aspect of this kind of research is that if it's working out well, the linguists and the community members can be equal participants in some form or other. And this is a new situation for linguists and communities, many of the research questions in community-based language research turn out to be about methodology and process. So a lot of the things that come up in the context of doing collaborative work are not actually about language. They're about how we do this, and how do we do it well, and how do we talk to each other, and how do we build a proper relationship. So an effect of this is that the results of a community-based language research project are not simply tangible materials such as documentation, but are also, in a sense, the process of collaboration itself. And one question about that is, how do we talk about process, and how do we explain that process? The process itself is a result to those who are evaluating us within an academic context. So if research roles change in a community-based language research project, if speakers are experts and are leading researchers, what kinds of effects might this have? And so I'm just going to conclude by mentioning three. One is that there can, in fact, be democratization of knowledge. In a community-based language research framework, when research roles change, community knowledge and community ways of knowing, constructing, and disseminating knowledge are highly valued. And the Eurocentric knowledge that traditional models of research focus on is privileged less. Another possible effect of this kind of research is that empowerment for both community members and linguists can occur. So for instance, there's respect for the autonomy, contributions, and expertise of all members of a research team and all partners, and validation and valuing of community knowledge and expectations. And these things can lead to people feeling much more powerful and much better about themselves in a research context. And finally, social action, social change, and social justice can occur. Shifting the balance between linguists and community in community-based language research fieldwork roles is a step towards real partnership. And if a project which is using this kind of methodology goes some way towards succeeding in creating real partnership and collaboration between linguists and community members, and if as a result community knowledge is valued, then social change can begin to happen. And gaps between the linguist and the community, expert and non-expert, researcher and researched, academic world and non-academic world begin to be bridged. Thank you.
Other questions?
Just to play the devil's advocate for a second, one reason why universities require that the results be freely publishable is so that people can write papers and get doctorates, right? So at least that's my university's approach. Yeah, and so I think it's perfectly reasonable to say that the community, you know, should negotiate this and understand what's going on, but I would be surprised if there was a university that would agree to not have something like that. So they, you know, some project goes on for 5 years, and then the elders decide they don't like it and don't like to publish. Right? That would be like a disaster from the university's point of view.
Yes, it would be, but it wouldn't be from the point of view of the community. So that's, I think, one of the areas in which negotiation needs to take place. And I think also patience is a virtue in these kinds of situations, because it may be that at one point, let's say elders decided that something should not be published, should not be in the public domain. That could change over time, again, if relationships continue to be built and collaboration continues. Or it may be that the material will be valuable to the community, or be used by the community, even if it's not used by the academics. There's a real issue of competing interests. And if you're really trying to do community-based language research in a completely collaborative fashion, the interests of the linguists are not the primary ones. And that's something that linguists who want to work in that kind of methodology and model actually need to be aware of. I think your point is a very important one. Well, if you actually read the literature in participatory action research or participatory research, action research, and also community-based research, one of the themes that comes through it, so this is not in linguistics, but this is, you know, models that are similar to the one that I was describing here. One of the things that some of the advocates of these models say is that that the researchers, that one of the goals of the research should actually be to get, to have the expert from the academy disappear. So one of the goals of a community-based language research project might be that there will no longer need to be linguists working with the community. Elena. That's one of the roles that a linguist can play in this kind of work is, as I mentioned, is acting as a kind of translator or bridge between the university and the community. That's a really, really crucial aspect of the work that we've been doing anyway in British Columbia. And it's very difficult to do that kind of work because you're really caught in two worlds or even maybe more. And I don't think that one world is necessarily right and the other one is necessarily wrong. It's simply that they don't necessarily agree. And so you have to find some way of coming to an agreement and an understanding. And that requires a lot of trust. And trust, in turn, requires building relationships and establishing a good collaboration.
I'd like to ask what kind of role might PhD students have in your kind of model, or is there any role for PhD students, because they do have to do research.
Yeah.
And I myself as a linguist, you know, I do this kind of field work you talk about, but you know, I always come up with research questions because don't work on, let's say, grammar or some linguistic research, and they will accept that. Yeah? So I think there must be a balance, and if we as a linguist give something to them, yeah, our work, our expertise, and we receive something from them, of course, we learn about their culture, we learn the language, but of course they should also accept that we want to get something, you know. See, what I try is to communicate that I have linguistic interests and I'm a researcher. And of course I do help them to develop teaching materials, etc., etc. So there must be really cooperation, and that does not mean that I sacrifice, you know, my linguistic interests to the community.
I think that's a very important point, and it's one that I myself have struggled with. In the context of this sort of project. And I think, again, patience and building relationships and trust is the key to all of this. And, you know, what I'm talking about is possibly quite different in different parts of the world. That's why I talk about the fact that I'm working in British Columbia in a very specific political and intellectual climate. And so in that particular context, building relationships requires putting the linguistics second. Doesn't mean it's not ever going to be possible to do it, or that it isn't being done at all. It's just that it's not the linguist questions which are first. I think there are a huge number of issues with intellectual property rights, and I think the whole way of thinking about intellectual property is really based on commercial interests, and it doesn't apply in very many cases to the kind of work that we do in language communities. And so I think a lot of that needs to be completely rethought, actually. And when I talked to members of the Human Research Ethics Board at UVic about the kinds of issues that we were coming up with, and they were completely astonished. They had no idea that people could do research in different ways with community members as leading researchers and so on. It hadn't occurred to them, and they didn't know exactly what to do about it. So conversation clearly needs to take place in a larger context, and also at individual universities, about these kinds of issues. Okay, thank you.